This is the Transmission Times End of Year Special, Part 2.
Last week we went on our first holiday this year. I'm gonna call it a holiday, but it's actually like 3 nights, 4 days in Bucharest, the capital of Romania. We have friends there and we got an Airbnb with a big terrace so we could like meet at our place too and hang out there. As soon as we arrived there, I started cleaning the whole apartment and disinfecting everything. And it was the first time I kind of realized that I was so carefree before about anything. Like, I wouldn't even think about like the remote control or the bed sheets I'm sleeping in or the towels that I'm using. Like, anything. I would be totally carefree about all these things. And now it took me, I think, 2 hours to wipe out all the handles, everything, all the switches, to change the sheets. Ugh. And they had hardwood floors and I couldn't find anything to wipe the floors with. So I was so tired. I think it was 10 in the evening and I just sprayed a solution I had on me, like a disinfectant on the floors, and they got stained. When I started telling people, like, hey, they were asking me, like, what do you do? Did you arrive safe? And I'm like, yeah, I'm just scrubbing the floor because I messed it up. And most of them knew somebody who went through that and they had all these tips. It was nice to kind of know that I'm not the only one.
Today, I'm writing myself a permission slip. And that permission slip gives me, the little girl part of me, the innocent part of me, the part of me that doesn't get weighed down by responsibilities to others, gives that little girl the freedom to create and play and be and experience moments of peace and joy in the midst of the we find ourselves in.
My husband, who was very laid back, went to the grocery store with the boys and he came back and he was all kinds of flustered. And I was like, what's going on? He actually really enjoys going to the grocery store with the kids, which I think is like marvelous. So him coming home upset was odd. And I'm like, what happened? And he was like, oh, the signs on the floor. I am so done with the signs on the floor. And, you know, it's just one of those moments where you're just, you know, the earth shakes just a little bit beneath you again. And you're reminded of how unstable the ground is. And that there are arrows in the grocery store. And there are times when I envision myself kneeling down and peeling it off with my bare hands. I don't care what it takes for my little fingers. They could bleed. I would love to just get down there and just scrape them off.
So one thing that I think is better now than before the pandemic started is I know my neighbors. And in Brooklyn, sometimes it's hard to get to know your neighbors. I'm about to head over to St. James Place, which has become a little bit famous for having a neighborhood dance party every weekend. It started as the 7 p.m. cheer, and this family started to play music on their stoop, and now it's become this weekend event that at 7 p.m. every weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, they play really, really great music. And neighborhood folks come out and dance in the street and everyone wears masks. And I'm making friends there and meeting people and meeting my neighbors. And it's really feeling like a community. So despite everything being closed up and closed off, I know more people. And because of that, it all feels a bit more open.
Yesterday, I went for a walk with my daughter and my two grandchildren. They took their bikes and we went onto a large open space. My granddaughter said to me, "Granny, I want to go to the cafe." And I had to say, "Well, sorry, the cafes aren't open now." And she said, "Oh, it's not fair. I wish that virus never happened."
Something I've noticed since going out into the wild again is that after having one outing to a cafe for about an hour and a half, catching up with people from university, I came home and I was wiped out. So it's almost like socializing again, seeing other people, being out in the world is actually quite draining after being inside and in the same bubble with the same people for 50 plus days.
What I miss the most, the people. The people. You meet so many good people on the road and the kindness of strangers. I miss that, and I miss it because being at home all the time, you spend too much time on social media, which is so negative, and it can overwhelm you. And when you're on the road traveling, you are meeting new people every day, and you realize most of them are so good.
I've never been in a situation where I've seen so many people come together and identify with the same needs, whether it be rich, poor, you know, from anywhere in the world. We've all know what it is to not have a job or not have enough food or run out of masks or, you know, just being anxious going into the grocery store or just running errands or just living on with life in general.
I was reading the New York Times and it was just one article after the next that was making our country look like it had fallen into fascism. I have to say, as an outsider, I'm an American living in Singapore and I have been here for 6 years. And looking from outside, it just seems like we are a fading empire. And I think COVID has only fast-forwarded that process. So even though from afar it seems it is totally deteriorating there, I know it's still home. And I know we're going to go back there eventually. But it's going to be a long time until we set foot in the U.S. again. And I miss it. I miss a lot of things. I miss tacos and donuts and really, really good pizza. And I miss the people most of all.
I miss the connection to an audience, to other people in the room who get you, who see you and you see them. Being together in that shared experience as a live event, it feels like home. It is the closest thing to home that I feel is when I'm on a stage and I can look at a person in the eyes and say, "I'm here, I'm with you and you're with me and we're gonna get through this crazy thing called life together."
As someone who's seen many disasters, who's literally been all over the world in the aftermath of hurricanes, earthquakes, in war zones, in infectious disease outbreaks like Ebola, what astounded me most about New York was the people, the kindness, the generosity, the overwhelming generosity, where people would show up at the gates to our little Central Park clinic and they would have their arms full of donations of food of every sort you can possibly imagine. You know, 10 and 11 o'clock at night, people would bring hot meals so that our overnight staff could have hot meals for their midnight lunch. And it was, again, beyond anything we could have possibly hoped for.
I helped a friend who was short an employee and I filled in. And after we helped out, you know, we talked about what was the worst thing about all of this and the fact that we're not independent people. We don't live in isolation. humans are not made to live in isolation. We're not made to be separate. We are required for our existence to cooperate, to have communities. We have to have people who touch each other and breathe with each other and sing together. This is human life. We need to share each other's microbiomes and air and speech and skin. All of this society living together requires that. It's not a choice just to separate it and make everyone sterile from each other. That's not a living option that promotes life. It's the opposite of that. This is a path toward killing people.
I measure time by how many books I've read. I measure time by the growth of the grandbaby, who before this pandemic is over, will have his first birthday. I measure time by the things I haven't done that I meant to do. I measure time by the things that I'll never get to do that are gone forever. I measure time by the time I haven't been around my family.
I've noticed I've started marking time based on the pandemic. So the common phrase is when this is all over. But I contemplate that and I think, but what does that mean until what is over? Pandemic? Because if you look at the CDC website, all of the data suggests that the pandemic, in what a pandemic means by definition, is actually over. So are we just waiting for a vaccine until this is over? This being the time that we don't have a vaccine? This being the time where we have to remote teach our children? This being the time where you have to wear a mask everywhere and people judging you if you don't wear a mask or whatever? It's so unclear what this is until this is all over. Coronavirus has become the tether of time. Everything is in orbit around coronavirus. Whether we like it or not, I'm in the camp of I don't like it. And this is where we are as a world. We're a little spiky ball that's microscopic is ruling our lives and our day to day.
This pandemic is such a fickle thing. I think I've got my life under control and that I'm dealing with it and I can be patient and look ahead and it will end at some point, and that meanwhile I have arranged everything in my life to make sure that I'll be okay. And then it throws a whammy at me and everything crashes down and it's very, very difficult suddenly. I've never been through anything quite like this. I'm almost 70 and I've been through the deaths of both of my parents. 7 years ago, the death of my husband through cancer. And those things were very difficult, especially the death of my husband. But I've never experienced the kind of sudden depression that hits me with this pandemic.
I think people are getting pandemic fatigue, and yet we gotta like hunker down and just stay calm and carry on, which is a great phrase, you know? Like, I mean, I live with that ideology from my husband because he's British. And so, you know, he's taught me a lot through this pandemic. You don't complain about it. You just carry on and do what you have to do. Sometimes I'm so Miss Drama Queen and I fall apart and I'm very emotional. But there he is, you know, steady as she goes. My husband, he's just rock solid, getting through the day. But every now and then, I see when the pandemic gets to him and some little thing like too many spoons in a drawer, and he'll blow up over that. I don't want to laugh because it kind of makes him more angry, but, you know, just the way it hits different people, you know?
What I fear most about the situation right now is that a COVID-19 vaccine will become mandatory to basically live in our society. I have a child who's landed in the hospital 3 times after vaccines, and he can't have them. And the laws around this in my state have been getting really tighter and tighter, and less options for people to get an exemption.
If I can be honest, I don't think I had a best moment with my kids. And that makes me feel like such an awful mom just saying that. It actually makes me want to cry a little bit thinking about that. I never had that moment, like a lot of people, at least it seems like, right, on Facebook, where they say, oh, it's been such a great time as a family. We're doing crafts and we're enjoying family time and this and that. And I feel so awful, but I have not had that. I feel like every day we just survived. We just survived.
There have been a couple of unexpected things about this pandemic. I'm going to lead off with the worst to me, which would be the total disrespect of the way law enforcement or police were treating Black people in the beginning of the pandemic. There was countless videos of police just beating up people because they didn't have a mask on, or they were standing next to mine and was asked for the mask on. It's one incident where they just totally disrespected this young Black lady in the train station in New York City, and she was with her daughter. Then the George Floyd incident happened. And after that, everything just went crazy after the George Floyd. I guess people just said enough is enough. Everybody just lost it. So everybody's in an uproar.
Sometime around 2016, I heard that Bob Dylan was winning a Nobel Prize for Literature. And gave me the impression that he must be a lot better than I give him credit for in some way that I couldn't understand. But about a year ago, I was introduced by accident to one of his songs, The Ballad of Hollis Brown. It was a shocking ballad, a shocking song to listen to, about a family. The location is somewhere in South Dakota, who is going through a really hard time. They are in what seems to be complete isolation and in desperation, and it's a tragedy. And when things started shutting down in March and April this year, that song became a recurring memory to me, and it became like a theme. He prayed to the Lord above, oh, please send you a friend. Your empty pockets tell you you ain't got no friend. Your baby's crying louder now, it's pounding in your brain. Way out in the wilderness, a cold coyote calls. Your eyes fix on the shotgun that's hanging on the wall.
Always in my life, the moments where I have felt closest to God have been either immediately before or immediately after the lowest moments of my life. Learning my mom cheated on my dad. I had to take sacrament from a very toxic ex one time. I was told to apply for another job. Of course, the suicide attempt. And I really don't know what to do with that. It does seem like intimacy with God really ought to be possible without painful experiences. But that hasn't been my experience. I'm reminded always when I think about this odd feature of my faith, this quote from the novel Till We Have Faces, which is by C.S. Lewis. And he says, "Holy places are dark places. It is life and strength, not knowledge and words, that we get in them. Holy wisdom is not clear and thin like water, but thick and dark like blood." That's it. That's what holy places are for me. They've always been thick and dark and horrible and wonderful and beautiful and brutal. But I would never not want to be there. And I would never not want the life and the strength that are now mine as a result of living into and through those holy places.
As if things aren't bad enough, the mountains to the north of my city are burning down. And when that started happening, I just thought, man, come on, 2020, this is too much, just stop it. But it feels like the burning of the mountains by my home is like an analogy for everything that's happening right now. And I know that after a fire, that can be almost like a cleansing for the forests, even for desert forests, clearing away all that underbrush and creating all this food for the soil, and the new plant life comes up out of that, and it can be a completely new forest in a few years. And I just am praying and praying that we come out of it as a rebirth into something better. That's my prayer.
So yesterday was the last day of school for my kids at their Waldorf school. When we got there, we were all lining up in our cars, and there were a couple of police cars at the front of the line, and they started off, and we drove all around the back of the school. And every, like, 10 to 20 feet, there was a teacher. And it was really cool because the teachers were all there, and they had, like, signs, or there were beautiful flowers. One teacher had all these rainbow, like, windmill things, and Imogen especially liked it. I think even Reese liked it. And
have a good summer.
At the end, Imogen was really sweet about it and said,
"I want to keep the sign so I can tell my kids, do the sign I used the last day of school when we were in lockdown." Yep. So do I.
Yep. It's like asking what part of running a marathon do you want to remember. Well, running marathons hard. Most of you just want to remember crossing the finish line, except for all of us know, oops, there is no finish line. Oh, and none of us trained for this either. I know I have to treasure the few bright spots, you know, which I guess is, you know, kind of like having mantras when you're running a race, you know, those moments of impromptu sidewalk conversations with neighbors, or the few times we've had people over to sit in our backyard for drinks 6 feet away, of kids playing outside with their siblings, you know, sometimes enjoying working together with my wife. I hope that'll get us through.
I imagine the virus thriving all over the planet. It's an amazing piece of biological engineering
It is so successful, and I have to every now and then admire it for that. Humans are so puny in contrast to this very strange and alien-looking form of life. So I try and keep that wonder and distance sometimes because it helps me see the big picture, which is that we never had control of things. We just thought we did.
You know, I've had my fair share of trauma. And even during this pandemic, there have been some things that have happened that have really shaken our family. You know, life doesn't stop. Even though the pandemic feels like it stops everything, it doesn't stop life. And when bad things have happened, I try to not think about it like, I wish this had never happened. Even though I do wish that, I just feel like this is life, and it's messy, and it's ugly. But I'm really trying to find what I can learn from this. And hopefully that learning experience won't also be my undoing. That's the hope, right? That this is trial by fire, but hopefully the fire won't burn us to bits.
I'd like to say a huge thank you to everyone who contributed to the Transmission Times over the last 8 months. It's your voices and your stories that have documented this time for all of us. Thank you so much. In this episode, you've heard the voices of Amanda, Joan, Christina, Kim, Jacinta, Vicky, Renee, Lauren, Akwi, Mark, Duane, Karen, Anna, Carl Ann, Megan, John, Angela, Diane, Nate, and Britta. These voices are coming to you from all over the US, as well as the UK, Singapore, Romania, and New Zealand. If you'd like to share your story, the Transmission Times Archive is still accepting submissions. Go ahead and record on your smartphone and email it to us at transmissiontimes@gmail.com or call 847-354-4163 and leave a voicemail. Thank you. The Transmission Times is created by me, Katie Semro. Swim.